We get it. You're busy. You don't have time to waste on the mainstream media. That's why Salem News Channel is here. We have hosts worth watching, actually discussing the topics that matter. Andrew Wilkow, Dinesh D'Souza, Brandon Tatum, and more. Open debate and free speech you won't find anywhere else. We're not like the other guys. We're Salem News Channel. Watch anytime on any screen for free 24/7 at snc.tv and on Local Now, Channel 525.
The following program is sponsored by What's Right, What's Left Ministries and is responsible for its content.
Portions of the following program may be pre-recorded.
I am Pastor Ernie Sanders, the voice of the Christian resistance. Stay tuned. My radio broadcast, What's Right, What's Left, is coming up right now.
Independence, Ohio.
Changed our life for the better in many different ways.
Heard around the world every Monday through Friday.
Pastor Sanders is always years ahead of the rest of the media, telling you exactly what they're covering up.
This is What's Right, What's Left.
I tune in every chance I get to hear exactly what's going on with the voice of the Christian resistance.
Unabashedly cutting through the rhetoric by exposing the hard topics facing our society and world.
A lot of the other news media don't pick up the news items like he does.
And bring into light the enemy of freedom who are out to steal your rights, your children, and enslaving you.
You really get the truth out. I can tune into your show and hear the unvarnished truth. Thank you.
This is What's Right, What's Left with Pastor Ernie Sanders.
Good evening and welcome to another edition of What's Right, What's Left on this 21st day of August 2023. And tonight, he keeps himself in the dark, right there looking in the cage. Style is our producer. He's in the dark.
Good evening, Pastor.
There you go. You can barely see him, can you? You hear, of course, you heard the cackle, right? There she is. The cackle comes again. Always cackle, but never any eggs. She is here tonight where I can keep a very close eye on her. Little Lisa.
Good evening, everyone.
And right next to her is none other than Deacon Randy Gay.
Be blessed. No stress, everybody.
There you go. I keep an eye on both of them. Here you go. We're going to get started tonight. We got a lot to do, a whole lot to do. So do you remember the title of the message? You guys were both there when I preached it, didn't you?
Tale of Two Cities?
No. Yes. It was a tale of several cities. Mm-hmm. And tonight, we're going to pick it up where we left off. Now, you often hear people talk about sanctuary cities being in the Bible, okay? Well, it speaks of one sanctuary city in the Bible. There you might be able to say two. But they confuse sanctuary cities with cities of refuge.
Amen.
And there's a major, major difference between sanctuary cities and cities of refuge. And today, in America, a sanctuary city gives you sanctuary from the law.
That's right.
In other words, if you're an illegal alien, maybe a drug dealer there, you can go to places. I mean, you can go to Chicago. You can go to Chicago and pretty much commit any kind of crime you want. And if you do get arrested by any chance, you'll be out the next day. And the cops really don't want to arrest you because the corruption is so great. Most of these cities now, they've got Soros whores as DAs, district attorneys, and these are people that are bought and paid for by George Soros to corrupt the city. I mean, that's exactly what they do. So in cities like Chicago, cities like Los Angeles, San Francisco, Detroit, New York, what do you find? You find every kind of crime, every kind of criminal there, and you know, most of these cities nowadays are infested with rats, too.
That's right. Well, Baltimore's another one.
But I mean, San Francisco is really bad where they've got defecation people on sidewalks. You have to. They tell you don't walk around with open-toed shoes.
Yeah, they're seeing diseases there that they haven't seen since the Middle Ages.
and that's
because of sanitation there.
And so you've got drug addicts, homeless people, you've got, but there's sanctuaries for sin, sanctuaries for crime. So when we started out yesterday with the first sanctuary city known was Sodom and Gomorrah. Okay, now, a lot of people say, well, I thought it was, what did you just preach on the day before that? Babylon. No, Babylon wasn't a sanctuary city as much as Babylon was a, what do they call it? Agenda 2030, the, of that day, of yep. that day, uh-huh. the new world order of that day. Sure. But here now, we're going to take a close look at cities of refuge. So let's pick it up in Numbers 35, starting with verse 9.
And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, speak unto the children of Israel, saying to them, when ye come over Jordan into the land of Canaan, then ye shall appoint your cities to be cities of refuge for you. For the slayer may flee thither, which killeth any person at unawares.
Okay, let's stop there.
Sure.
How would you kill somebody unawares? What do you think that they're talking about here?
Well, so you're building the wall, you're laying bricks on the wall, you turn around, you kick a brick off, and back of you, it falls down and kills somebody.
Do you ever do that?
Well, I haven't, but it's possible, you know.
All right. I don't know. It sounds like there may be some guilt there. I don't know. All right. Okay, very good. What about you're out and you're hunting and you look over and you see what you think is a deer in the thicket, okay? Mm-hmm. And you let loose with your arrow and you go over and you find here's a guy wearing a deerskin jacket, right?
Yeah. That's, yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Okay.
And then isn't it sometimes you kill somebody and you just don't know? You just for whatever reason, mm-hmm. you know, something you did occasioned the death of somebody and you are totally unaware.
What about if you're wrestling? You and your buddy out there start wrestling and just playing and all of a sudden he has a heart attack.
Heart attack, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, we just played a clip last night. 150,000 children died after getting the shot, after getting the poisonous poke, okay, the COVID poisonous poke. And so here you may be with one of those children just playing the game or whatever, okay? Mm-hmm. So there's a number of ways that can happen, okay? I told a story about, I don't want to take it out over national news, but there in the church the other day when about the groundhog. You remember the groundhog? Okay. And, there, you know, we had a groundhog. By the way, that groundhog was back today out there again.
Oh, my goodness.
And I could have got him. I mean, I pulled in there with my car. I could have, but I didn't. I showed him mercy. But we had a groundhog, and this groundhog would just taunt you. And then they would come up, actually lean up against your sliding glass doors and taunt you. And then he would do his business on the deck just outside the door. So you go step it out there, okay?
Oh, dear.
And so one day as I was walking down by the river, okay, and here I look over and I see what I think is the groundhog. He's sitting there right on the bank of the river sunning himself. And I said, okay. I look right down and what's there? The brick that we use to put the tarps. I'm going to finish this guy. He's not going to taunt me no more. And I picked up that brick, and I got walked up, and as I got close, it was a lady I know who was sitting down there at my riverbank in my yard. She was sitting down where her head was just above. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow. How would I explain that to her husband? You know.
Yeah.
Ooh. Yeah. I'm sorry I killed your wife, but I thought she was a groundhog. Well, you know that would. Wouldn't want to do that, right? No. So there's a lot of different ways.
Yeah, there's things that can happen. Sure.
Yeah, and you've never been mistaken for a groundhog, I'll bet.
Wrong color hair.
All right. So now, pick it up where you left off.
Okay, and they shall be unto you cities for refuge, for the avenger, that the manslayer die not until he stand before the congregation in judgment. And of these cities, which ye shall give six cities, ye shall have for refuge. Ye shall give three cities on this side, Jordan, and three cities shall be given in the land of Canaan, which shall be cities of refuge. These six cities shall be a refuge, both for the children of Israel, and for the stranger, and for the sojourner among them, that every one that killeth any person unawares may flee thither. And if he smite them with an instrument of iron, so that he die, he is a murderer, and the murderer shall surely be put to death. And if he smite him throwing a stone, wherewith he may die, then he is a murderer, and the murderer shall surely be put to death. And if he smite him with a hand weapon of wood, wherewith he may die, and he die, he is a murderer, and the murderer shall surely be put to death. The avenger of blood himself shall slay the murderer. When he meeteth him, he shall slay him.
All right, stop there. The avenger of blood. Okay, that word there in the Hebrew, actually, it's an interesting word, gall, okay? Who does that apply to? That's another word that's translated a kinsman or a relative.
Sure.
Or a relative. Mm-hmm. So where did he get that authority? Where did this relative get that authority if you don't have
it? Well, this is from God, a life for a life.
Specifically would be Genesis 9, verse 6, okay?
Yeah.
The Noach. So not only did he have the manslayer the right, but he actually had an obligation, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
Mm-hmm. So here now, but go ahead and pick it up.
Okay. But if he thrust him of hatred or hurl at him by laying of weight that he die, or in enmity smite him with his hand that he die, he that smote him shall surely be put to death. For he is a murderer. The revenger of blood shall slay the murderer when he meeteth him. But if he thrust him suddenly without enmity, and have cast upon him anything without laying of weight, or of any stone wherewith a man may die, seeing him not, and cast it upon him that he die, and was not his enemy, neither sought him harm.
Okay, let's stop there for a minute. Look. Have you had people come upon you suddenly and startled you?
Oh, sure.
Yes.
Now, yeah, that happens. Yeah.
I had a situation. I had just gotten out of service, okay, and I had just gotten married. And I had witnessed a man unknowingly because before that I had witnessed a man getting his throat slit, not realizing because it was being done in quiet where these two fellows who used to talk all the time who were in the same barracks that I was in, and I was on my bunk, and I heard them talking over there, and I was looking right at them, and then I dozed off. And when morning came, the one fellow was dead. He was all covered with blood. That had happened, and I had not been out of the service very long and home. And I woke up in my new bed, my new house. And at that moment, I wasn't quite sure where I was. I wasn't acclimated to. Then I heard a noise, and that noise was coming from the bathroom. All I know was pitch dark, and there was a noise. And so I jumped up, and luckily, it was my new bride, my new wife. There was enough light when she opened that door, I could see who she was. Now at that time I could have hit her, in the service when they come in the mornings, when the CO comes in to wake you, CQ, they call it, charge of quarters, comes in to wake you. Often what they'll do, they'll tap their feet with a billy club. Now you're given about 7 seconds from that time to not be responsible for your actions, because you don't know how you're going to act. Sometimes they tap you on the feet, sometimes they might tap you other places. And now there has been some guys that were waiting for the opportunity.
Oh, yeah.
But they usually give you 7 seconds before you're responsible for your response, okay? And this is what they're talking about here. He says, so go ahead and pick it up.
Okay. And then the congregation shall judge between the slayer and the avenger of blood according to these judgments. And the congregation shall deliver the slayer out of the hand of the avenger of blood, and the congregation shall restore him to the city of his refuge, whither he was fled. And he shall abide in it until the death of the high priest, which was anointed with the holy oil. But if the slayer shall at any time come without the border of the city of his refuge, whither he has fled, and the avenger of blood find him without the border of the city of his refuge, and the avenger of blood kill the slayer, he shall not be guilty of blood. But if he should have remained in the city of his refuge until the death of the high priest, but after the death of the high priest, the slayer shall return into the land of his possession. So that these things shall be for a statute of judgment unto you throughout your generations in all your dwellings. Whoso killeth any person, the murderer shall be put to death by the mouth of witnesses, but one witness shall not testify against any person to cause him to die. Moreover, you shall take no satisfaction for the life of murderer, which is guilty of death, but he shall surely be put to death. And you shall take no satisfaction for him that has fled to the city of his refuge, that he should come again to dwell in the land until the death of the priest. And ye shall not pollute the land wherein ye are, for blood it defileth the land, and the land cannot be cleansed by the blood that is shed, therein, but by the blood of him that sheddeth it. Defile not, therefore, the land when ye shall inhabit, wherefore I dwell, for I, the Lord, dwell among the people of Israel.
Now, just think about that. He tells you in all through Scripture that the land is polluted with the blood of the innocent. But just think about that here. In America, our sewers run red from coast to coast with the blood of innocent children.
With children, that's right.
And do you think that that sound is not crying out to Almighty God?
We know that it does. And
so, all right, we're gonna stop right there. I got to make some commentary on last night's debate. Here in the debate, this is what I've decided after watching as much of it as I could, that these people not only would I not never support, but I will work against them. Chris Christie, Haley, Tim Scott, Mike Pence, and Hutchinson. I will work against those people.
Well, who do you think won the debate last night?
Donald Trump.
Okay. Yes.
Okay. Donald Trump won hands down. In fact, here, while that debate was taking place last night, Donald Trump was on the Tucker Carlson show, and they ended up with last night during the program, they had 194.1 million viewers during the program, and afterwards it went over 200 million, which far exceeded the number that watched the debate. Now, Fox News banned anyone there from mentioning that Donald Trump was going to be on Tucker Carlson's program. They were all banned, not allowed to do that. Now, here, it's an interesting thing because Brett Baer is sneaky. I've watched this guy. Sometimes you can see the look in his eyes that he's going to ask one of those sneaky questions the way he does it. Okay. This guy is an avid anti-Trumper. He is an avid anti-Trumper. And so he asked the question to the other candidates one by one. Did Mike Pence do the right thing on January 6th? And, of course, all but two said yeah, okay? The two that didn't were was DeSantis and the guy with a funny name. Vivek. Vivek, okay. So those were the two that said no, okay. Now, it's an interesting thing because I just was listening to Trump, but I had listened to other constitutional lawyers, and they said, yes, not only did Mike Pence have the right, but he had the obligation. If you have information presented to you that a crime has been committed, it was his job to say, let me see the evidence. And right before him stood senators and congressmen holding the evidence in their hand, okay? And they claim, and of course, all the fake, uncorruptible, just unbelievable corrupt media, NBC, ABC, CBS, PMSNBC, all of the completely corrupt fake news media out there, of course, said the opposite. They told their lie. They got their lie delivered to them by George Soros, and they'll hold to their lie. But do you know what they did right after that? They changed the procedure.
Sure, they voted. And
they voted so that the vice president would not have the ability.
Because he was, by his position as vice president, obligated to do what he didn't do. He didn't do it, but he was, by his position as vice president, he was obligated really to do that.
So then when the lawyers were asked, okay, so now the vice president does not have the ability to do that. Right. Does that mean before they changed this that he did? And all the lawyers said yes. There you go. But you won't hear that on the very, very completely, totally corrupt news media, NBC, ABC, CBS, CNN, PMSNBC. And so it's just an amazing thing. So now here, when asked that, did Mike Pence do the right thing? Chris Christie, Nikki Haley, Tim Scott, Mike Pence, and Hutchinson all said yes, they lied. So not only from at this point here, because they did this to Donald Trump. It wasn't done to any of them. They did it to Donald Trump. Chris Christie is a hornless rhino.
Absolutely.
Okay. Yes.
Nikki Haley boasts about how Donald Trump had appointed her and how.
Right.
And I remember when that happened, how she could not say, the sun rose and set on Donald Trump. Oh, I remember that very clearly. And now she's saying, well, he's still my friend. And Donald Trump says, no, she's not. We are not friends. She betrayed me. Okay. And so all of these people here, as far as I'm concerned, Chris Christie, Nikki Haley, Tim Scott, Mike Pence, and Hutchinson are all traitors.
And they're also basically unelectable. I would like to see it get down to the candidate as quickly as possible so that we don't have this divided, conservative and Republican people. We need our one guy. We need to be a united front, and this needs to happen as quickly as possible.
All right.
Yes.
So here's what we're seeing happening right now and today in Georgia, okay? What you have is the enemies, okay? The enemies. When you swear an oath, you take an oath to defend the Constitution of the United States from all enemies, foreign and domestic.
Domestic, that's right.
So what we're doing, we're seeing right now domestic enemies of God, domestic enemies of country. As far as I'm concerned, every Democrat out there is my enemy because of what they stand for, okay? That means they're against my God. That means they're for killing babies. That's what. Now, and let me include that in with every rhino. And unfortunately, here in Ohio, we have in our House and Senate, we have a number of rhinos right here in Ohio. But I look at rhinos because they're the enemy of God. Why? They're betrayers, okay? And so, see, I'm not like these prissy preachers that you know, they're like dumb dogs, as it says in Isaiah. Isaiah 56,
right.
verse 10.
Right.
They're
right.
dumb dogs, too afraid to bark.
Too afraid mm-hmm. to bark, that's
yes.
right.
See, I do like the Lord Jesus. I mean what I say, and I say what I mean, okay? You don't have any doubts where I stand, like Donald Trump. And so, because of what they did to him, okay, he was the one that had the election stole from with us, too. This is why we can't let them get away with it. If it gets away with him, they've got away with it, the entire country. We'll be right back after this.
Catherine, you know, I've got Burquam and all the A team medias in Atlanta, the B or C teams in Milwaukee, the A teams there. They got all the top correspondents. Why? This is what I can't figure out. How did you end up in Atlanta tonight? Why are we talking to you from Atlanta, Georgia, ma'am?
Well, because at the same time that President Trump will be arraigned tomorrow, we will be in federal court over a lawsuit involving the movie 2000 and Mules. So, as luck would have it, here we are.
Well, I don't think that's luck. Is that providential? Seriously, you can't. By the way, if we were scriptwriters and pitched that as part of this overall drama, and oh yeah, Greg and Catherine are going to be there the same time Trump is in the same federal court, that's where you get thrown
Wild.
Out of the room. I mean, what are the odds of this? You're there for which. By the way, so here's the key: is that Catherine and Greg? And there's other people too, coming from other directions, but they basically have the receipts of how Georgia was stolen. This shows you what a sham this thing with Trump is. They actually have the receipts. Of course, Bill Barr says they have nothing, but that even reinforces the fact you've got a lot. Talk to me. What do you say, federal court? What are you guys doing tomorrow, Catherine?
Tomorrow is a hearing in the case where we will have the opportunity to present a motion to dismiss. And we'll see how it goes. Both sides get to argue. And, you know, we're about 3-4 blocks away from where it'll all be happening with the president. And it should be one for the history books.
So just when you say the discernment in the timeline, can you just walk us through a couple of key items?
Catherine, why don't you take a shot at this? This is
sure.
This is your story.
Sure. Well, most people don't necessarily know this, but Georgia hadn't cleaned its voter rolls in over a year coming into the 2020 election. That's because in 2019, Fair Fight, which is Stacey Abrams and Mark Elias, sued the state of Georgia to prevent them from cleaning their rolls. That case went on in federal court through the spring of 2021. And during that entire period of time, the state did not clean the voter rolls. And so in the aftermath of 2020, we were being inundated with calls from Georgians saying, the runoff is coming up. Is there anything we can do? The rolls were such a problem. The bringing in of proper electors was so problematic in the general. Is there anything we can do to make sure that this is a better process in the runoff? And so we dove into Georgia law and realized that, in fact, there is a provision in state code called an elector challenge. And the long and the short of it is we went through the voter rolls and we recognized that just based on residency, there were 364,000 ineligible voter records. So with that as a premise, I went to go and meet with Secretary Raffensperger. And here's where things get interesting, because he had already certified the election November 20th. I went and met with him December the 16th, and in that meeting was Secretary Raffensperger and many of his staff and others, and we talked about what True the Vote was helping Georgia citizens do by way of filing these elector challenges. And I said, you know, this is a huge number, and it's going to leave a mark, and I'm just letting everybody know it's coming. And Secretary Raffensperger, I'll never forget it. Pulled out a piece of paper, kind of back on the napkin, did a little bit of quick math and said, yeah, 364,000, about 14% of Americans move every year. We haven't been able to clean the rolls because of this lawsuit. So yeah, that sounds about right. That's about how many ineligible records there are. But what they didn't do in certifying and recertifying and all of the audits and all of the things, all of the great efforts that they say they went through. They never went back to look and see how those 364,000 ineligible voters voted. And so now what we know is that 67,000 of them did vote. Flash forward, he's on that call, the fateful call between Secretary Raffensperger and President Trump and others on January the 2nd. And on that call, he knew, because we had just had the meeting 2 weeks previous, he had already affirmed our methodology, affirmed our numbers. And Steve, what's more, told me, sounds about right. You know, the GOP should have been doing this all along. So it was a cover-up. And when he got on that call...
But hang on 1 second. Hang on. Before we get there, I got the 364, and he concurred with that. How did you get to the 67,000 of the that is the, don't bury the lead here, baby. How did you get the 67,000 of the 364 that actually voted?
Sure, you pulled the voter histories and you see who voted in 2020. That's who voted. I mean, you can look at the records that were still on the rolls that were ineligible, and you will see just how it breaks out. Some 47,000 of them were outside of their jurisdiction. Over 16,000 of them had already moved out of the state. Over 8,000 of them were totally inactive. It's all there. I mean, if they had been good stewards of the rolls, they would have seen that themselves. But they were so quick to obfuscate and say it was all a big lie, rather than looking at what had happened in the 2 years that they hadn't cleaned the rolls. And they should have looked.
Raffensperger knew the 364. The 364 was inaccurate, or it was ineligible. Did he also know that 67,000 voted? Almost 20% of the ineligible voted. And can those ineligible, when they vote, can they do a contingent vote to say, "Hey, my registration was in a different county, but I can update it"? Is that 67,000 a good hard number of people that should not have voted, and the voters should not have counted, given their perceived ineligibility of the 364?
Yes, that's a clean number. And if he wasn't doing that kind of an assessment, he certainly presented as though they had on that call with President Trump, when the president was going through line by line, well, what about this? What about that? And time after time was told, no, there's nothing to see here. There are no problems. We've looked at everything.
So, Catherine, how could that possibly happen? This wasn't a number you had to dig out. That number should have been up in their grill, ma'am.
I would agree. As the stewards of the Georgia vote, that should have absolutely been front and center for them. But I will say that in our experience with the people that you just named, we've had less than accurate outcomes with their involvement and with their awareness and with their willingness to tell the truth. So this doesn't shock us, but when we put the timeline together, and it just rings in my ears when Raffensperger said, yeah, that looks about right. They should have been cleaning the rolls all along, when that was his responsibility. But he took a knee to Stacey Abrams, didn't do it.
In the certification process, is Raffensperger legally liable because he certified this, and then he went to the state legislature who accepted that as a certification by the Secretary of State, ma'am?
You know, I don't know if he's legally liable or not. He is certainly responsible to the voters of Georgia, and he let them down in a big way and misrepresented. You know, it's a shocking truth that voter rolls are so poorly maintained.
It's the key.
That the facts of who voted, it's absolutely the key. The facts of who voted in 2020, let me give you a shocking statistic. As of March 1st, 2021, only 11 states had made their rolls public to confirm who had voted in 2020. It's why we had to drop our lawsuits, because there was not available data.
Why would you even have a lawsuit about something as logical as just cleaning up the voter rolls to make sure that people that are registered to vote actually live where they say they're going to live? And so there's no doubt it's a legal, legitimate, certifiable vote. Why would somebody go to court to fight that, ma'am?
Great question, because when she ran for governor against Kemp and lost, she claimed that it was due to the rolls having been purged in a racially biased fashion. And so she sued the state on that account. Ultimately, the state won in 2021. Now they can resume cleaning the rolls. But in the interim, that challenge process that I described that we took on, they came after us and sued us. We're now headed to trial in October with Fair Fight and Stacey Abrams and Mark Elias over the same thing. Why, as you rightly say, why is it so bad to have accurate voter rolls? And the answer is because if you know where the sleeper cells are, you can easily subvert a process because our certification is set up so that no one ever checks.
Don't bury the lead. You got the head demon, Mark Elias. Mark Elias has had his hand in this.
All righty, we are back. And right now, just to prove to every one of you she can read, Lisa, what do you have?
Okay, this is from the Gateway Pundit. And the firm at the center of a 3-year-long voter fraud investigation is also featured in a report this week from the Capital Research Center identifying the massive dark money used to prop up Joe Biden's flailing 2020 campaign. The firm GBI Strategies was paid millions in nonprofit money to organize voters for purposes that appear to be thinly veiled campaigning, meaning that left-wing billionaires routed money through nonprofits to give to GBI Strategies money that would be difficult to trace and would be spent affecting the elections. The author of the report spoke with Gateway Pundit and explained more. The whole effort was a major push by the left to elect Democrats. They called it the Voter Rights Project, or VRP, and some also called it Everybody Votes. But what it really was the funding hub. They were coordinating their fundraising and their spending to get their desired result, putting the Democrats in power. This was the mechanism they used to make sure they won.
There you go. You heard it right here, folks. And listen, just to remind you folks that work for the mainstream media, the quickest way to get fired is to tell the truth. And that's what we do here all the time. You don't get fired for telling the truth here, do you?
Right. No, we don't. No.
Give us some truth, Randy. Give us some truth.
All right. Well, I like this, and this is the anatomy of the state. And basically what it says is it asks you a question. Do you believe in the nanny state? It says nearly everybody does. They think that government exists to manage society, solve social problems for the common good. And what else is government good for? I mean, after all. But now some people are not so sure. The COVID-19 train wreck unfolded before their eyes. And our senseless government dictated one thing after another. Close your business. Keep your kids home from school. Stay out of the park. Wear a mask to the store. Take a vaccine to keep your job. These edicts destroyed lives. They caused vaccine injuries and deaths. Canceled jobs, education, drove families apart. They eviscerated all civil liberties for the most part. Not everyone can see that our government did this. So did our government fail? The answer is that it did not. The administration excelled beyond its wildest dreams. The COVID regime had its pinnacle achievement, at least so far. Now, to defeat COVID collectivism, we must reject this nanny state. And I think that we've got another one coming that I don't know whether it's COVID-2 or whatever, but they're bracing for another one.
Well, even before that, you're not going to be able to drink your worries away because the Biden regime says, hold your beer. This is an article out of Gateway Pundit. And they're considering, you know, because you've got a bunch of control freaks, the entire left, you know, we don't want to live their lives. We don't want to control their lives, okay? But they want to control our lives. They want to where we can go, what we can see, what we can do, where we can work. And so here now, the Biden regime considers strict new booze guidelines to pressure Americans to limit alcohol consumption. I think that's a great idea to limit alcohol, but I think that Americans need, you know, we have this little thing, because where do we get our rights from?
God.
From God.
From God.
Yes.
The Biden regime is seemingly not satisfied with throwing innocent Americans in prison for coming after gas stoves in the name of a climate change. Now, they want you to enjoy less beer. The regime's health czar, Dr. George Koob, told the Daily Mail Thursday, which describes the guidelines as strict, that the United States Department of Agriculture is strongly considering emulating Canada's alcohol advice an attempt to pressure Americans to limit their consumption. They just want them to take more drugs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's yes. what it is. They
but
want
they them. Ought to be happy about Bud Light then.
Yeah.
I mean, the sales are down 30%, so
oh,
that's,
yeah.
that's 30%
yeah.
of the beer just went away.
Mm-hmm.
well, yeah. Canada recommends their citizens consume no more than 2 drinks per week. So you can only have 2 beers a week. Okay, now, Coob, who we should call him Boob, who admits to consuming wine twice a week, thinks there are no possible health benefits to such a proposal. If there's a health benefit, I think people will start to reevaluate where we're at in the U.S. This would mark a significant change in current U.S. guidelines, which state that women can have up to 1 bottle of beer, a small glass of wine, or a shot of spirit a day, while men can have 2 beers. This means men would be urged to reduce their alcohol consumption from 14 drinks to just 2, while women, it would be 7 to 2. This is...
But you said up to? You mean you can only... So then you should only really be drinking a half a bottle of beer.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. And so he goes on to say, under current U.S. guidelines, a drink is defined as containing 0.6 fluid ounces of alcohol.
Oh, my goodness.
Equivalent to 1 beer, 1 glass of wine, or 12% alcohol of 1 shot. These guidelines are up to 2025, just after the upcoming presidential election. Coop went to tell the Daily Mail that there were no benefits in drinking alcohol in terms of health. Most of the benefits people attribute to alcohol, we feel, they really have no more to do with someone's eating rather than what they're drinking. So it really has to do with the Mediterranean diet, social economic status that makes you able to afford the kind of diet that makes your own fresh food, and so forth. With this in mind, most of the benefits kind of disappear on the health side. It's just more lunacy, absolute
yes.
lunacy.
Of course it is.
Okay, they want us to do away with gas-powered lawnmowers. No more gas-powered lawnmowers, okay? They want you to do away with gas stoves now, gas water heaters. And, of course, in California, they want you to do away with gas-powered cars, and you know, they want to all go to all electric vehicles, and
but what happens when I run out of my electric power? Then don't I need a gas powered to redo me?
It's what they call brownouts happening all over California right now.
They're
happening right now all over California.
Sure.
Stupid is as stupid does.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Uh-huh.
And do you know what Governor Newsom is? Governor Newsom is stupid.
Yes, he is.
So stupid is Governor Newsom as stupid does, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Did you hear Lisa? She's got another article. She's on a roll. Go ahead.
Okay. Biden has been declared the Democrat nominee for president by Cedric Richmond, the co-chair of the Biden-Harris campaign. Richmond made the statement before a single vote has been cast, asserting that Biden is not debating for his position on the Democrat ticket because he's already the nominee. According to Richmond, when there is an incumbent president, there are no debates or primaries on the Democrat side. He emphasized that the Democrat National Committee has already endorsed President Biden, and this practice has been well settled dating back to Presidents Reagan and Ford. Richmond dismissed the notion of intra-party challenges, stating that it is a distraction from addressing the issues and challenges faced by the American people. Come on.
You know who didn't know that? Remember when Obama Nation was running against Hillary? They
mm-hmm.
had all those others that showed up, those guys. Wonder why they didn't know that.
Yeah.
You know?
it's convenient not to know certain things.
Uh-huh.
You only have to know them at certain times.
Right.
That's right. Isn't that right? Like the truth. The truth is relative, not the truth. They're wonderful people.
Well, you know, they keep referring to, Joe Obama keeps referring to Kamala as President Harris. Now, there's something going on there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And,
but, you know, if you think about, you know, her positions, I was listening to her, and she really went deep in her thoughts, and she was saying, a school bus, you know, a school bus, a yellow school bus. You love a yellow school bus. That's deep.
Oh, yes.
You know, I bet you took her a while working on that speech, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yes. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, boy.
All right. So go ahead.
No, sure. Now, this one's an interesting article because what it says is that it's exposing how Christian churches are participating in and facilitating human sex trafficking. And I thought this was very interesting. The guy's name is Brian Silhavy. He's the editor of the Health Impact News. And he says, for the past 3.5 years, I've exposed the American corporate Christian churches as willing participants in the satanic culture, encouraging their members to cooperate with the federal government and all its tyrannies. And it says, the church welfare system is the main pipeline for child exploitation and sex trafficking, and the entire evil system would be crippled and brought to its knees if Christian churches stopped participating in receiving government funding to take children from their lawful parents. It says almost every single Christian church in America today believes they're doing, quote unquote, God's work by participating in the government child welfare system, taking children away from their biological families, where they are often called orphans, unquote, even though in almost every instance there's a family member more than willing to take care of the child. Now, why does a nonprofit church have to receive government funding and enter into their satanic system? And actually what happens here is we all know that that's for pay. It says that it was reported in May, for example, that one-third of the Catholic churches in California are bankrupt because they have over 3,000 pending lawsuits. Now, the other culprit is the Southern Baptist Church, and they're the leader in foster care and adoption. And this is really kind of just the tip of the iceberg there. In Florida, parents are beware because your children aren't safe. And former county administrators and Child Protective Services board member and pastor's wife were sentenced to prison for child sex trafficking involvement. Several states are introducing legislation right now that will require pastors, priests, and other clergy to become mandated reporters that they, when they discover a child is being sexually abused in their church, rather than trying to deal with the issue themselves within their congregation. Now, laws requiring most professional people that deal with child reports have been in child trafficking have been in effect for decades. Now, the mandatory reporting finally has been studied, and the evidence shows that it's backfiring because mandatory reporting drives families away from seeking help and overshadows the system with false reports, making it harder to find the real culprits and the few children that are really in danger. In conclusion, it says this concept is sure to backfire. It will do nothing to catch predators among the clergy. Meanwhile, it'll take away what may be the one place an impoverished parent still can turn to for help without fear of an investigation of the family police, or as we call them, Child Protective Services.
Okay, now, who wrote that article?
The guy's name is Brian Silhavy.
Well, Brian, if you're listening out here, the content is good, except for you made one major mistake, and you kept referring to them as Christian churches.
Yeah.
Brian, I'm going to read to you from the Word of God. Now, the Word of God is what Christians, Brian, this is what we use, okay, is our guide and our standard. And this defines Christians, Brian. I'm just going to pick it up here, starting in verse, I'm going to start in verse 11. For what man knoweth the things of man, save the spirit of man, which is in him? Even so the things of God knoweth no man, but the spirit of God. Now we have received not the spirit of the world, but the Spirit which is of God, that we may know the things that are freely given to us of God. Which things also we speak, not in the words which man's wisdom teaches, but the Holy Ghost teaches, comparing spiritual things with spiritual. For the natural man receiveth not the things of the Spirit of God, for they are foolishness unto him. Neither can he know them, because they are spiritually discerned. This is what he's talking about, these so-called, they're calling churches.
Churches, yes.
They're not Christian churches.
Right.
This is what you call apostate. Now, but he that is spiritual judges all things, yet he himself is judged of no man. For who hath known the mind of the Lord, that he may instruct him? But we have the mind of Christ. Meaning Christian churches. So Christian churches don't do that. They don't traffic. Now, here's what Christians know. Listen to this. If we go over in the Bible, let's say, to Ezekiel chapter 28, for example. And Ezekiel chapter 28, we look at a fellow over here who believes, see, he's the prince of Tyrus, and he believes that he is a god. And so he goes, and we read down, and here the Lord is letting him know, no, you're not a god, okay? And I'm not going to go into the whole thing here. But then we get to the power behind him, the one that convinced him that he was a god, and that's Satan himself. And here's what he talks about, that he was made his money, his fortune. One of the things he made his fortune was in human trafficking. So if Satan is involved in human trafficking, was the first one to be involved in human trafficking, then human trafficking is not something that a Christian would be involved in, is it?
Oh, absolutely not.
Okay, and so I was going to read that part there where he says, thou shalt, let me see. No, I'm in the wrong chapter, that's why. Okay. Yeah.
But truth and reality is that they take the check. They take the check for everything, mm-hmm. for the food banks, for the homeless, for all of these things. And obviously, I'm pretty sure you've got to be 501c3 to take part in all of these things, because that's all done not by respect for religion, but more for political purposes and just contract. And so they become agents of the state and not of God.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yes.
All righty. So this is what he's referred to both in Isaiah chapter 14 and also in Ezekiel 28, referring to that. So Satan himself is the human trafficker. One of the things I wanted to say very quickly, because we're coming up to a quick break, and when we come to that quick break, we're going to hear the great one. I'll tell you about that. This, folks, the newsletter. Get the newsletter. We'll tell you more about the newsletter.
Amen.
It's very important that you get the newsletter. We have more people. I get more compliments in writing and thanking us for the information that they get in the newsletter. And it's got to drive the fake, corrupt news media crazy, knowing their job is to keep all of what we get in that newsletter up private. So we're coming up to a break. When we come back, I'll introduce the great one.
Alrighty.
Thank you for listening to What's Right, What's Left, the voice of the Christian resistance. To support this ministry, head to wrwl.org. That's wrwl.org. Mail your donations to What's Right, What's Left Ministries, 14781 Sperry Road, Newberry, Ohio, 44065. If you missed part of tonight's program, you can check out the podcast at thewordcleveland.com. TheWordCleveland.com. Once again, thank you for listening and supporting What's Right, What's Left Ministries, the voice of the Christian resistance. Stay tuned. The second hour is coming up next.
When I grow up, I want to work for a woke company, like super woke.
When I grow up,
I want to be hired based on what I look like
rather than my skills.
I want to be judged
by my political beliefs.
I want to get promoted
based on my chromosomes.
When I grow up,
I want to be offended
by my coworkers
and walk around the office
on eggshells
and have my words policed
by HR.
Words like
grandfather,
peanut gallery,
long time no see,
no can do.
When I grow up,
I want to be obsessed with emotional safety
and do workplace sensitivity training
all day long.
When I grow up, I want to climb the corporate ladder
just by following the crowd.
I want to be a conformist.
I want to weaponize my pronouns. What are pronouns?
It's time to grow up and get back to work. Introducing the number one woke-free job board in America, RedBalloon.work.